Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a special episode of Uncanny Treks as we wrap up our coverage of Star Trek the Animated Series 1973 Season 1. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how you doing this evening?
Bob, you got me watching cartoons from 1973, man.
1973, baby. And a couple from 1974, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. It's a long time ago. We weren't born yet, but they were still putting out Trek.
If listeners remember, when we were covering Season 4 of Star Trek Lower Decks, we thought it would be kind of fun to watch an old episode of Star Trek the Animated Series along with it. And we did that. We got through 12 episodes total, 10 episodes with Lower Decks, and then 2 episodes on the own. And then we had 10 episodes of the 70s animated series left over. The original plan was to watch those with Season 5. But when it was announced that Season 5 was the last episode of Star Trek Lower Decks, or the last season of Star Trek Lower Decks, rather, we decided to pair the new episodes of Lower Decks with the old Season 1 episodes of Lower Decks, which aired before our podcast. And so to finish out, we just decided we would do the remaining animated series episodes in two big chunks. So we're doing 4 episodes today, and then we are going to do 6 episodes next time, which is all of Season 2. Only 6 episodes, all of Season 2 of Star Trek the Animated Series. Does that make sense, Matt?
That does make sense, Bob. And I will say that while this animation is kind of hard to watch because it's pretty poor quality, not necessarily for the time, but compared to today's animation, compared to Lower Decks, you're not going to see the thing. But the stories are still interesting. That's the thing. They still hit the same way old school Star Trek does. But they're all condensed into 30-minute long episodes.
Yeah, or even a little. Aren't they really more like 22 minutes?
Yeah, they're a little shorter than that, with commercials,
The episodes we're covering today to end out Season 1, Episode 13, The Ambergris Element, which aired December 1st, 1973. And if you think about that, the title is a weird spoiler of the whole book, which I'm just now thinking about. It's a weird spoiler of the whole episode.
Yeah, but you have to know what that is, though, Bob. And that's the problem.
That's true.
Most people don't know what that is. And I didn't. I'll be honest. I didn't have a clue. And I had to look it up. I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Matt's disrespecting the kids watching this show. And we've got episode 14, Slaver Weapon. This was originally aired on the 8th of December, 73. We've got episode 15, Eye of the Beholder. That's from the 5th of January, 1974. And then we've got episode 16, Jihad. Somebody was a Dune fan or really Islamophobic or both. But episode 16, Jihad, that originally aired on the 12th of January, 1974. So, Matt, to start with, for Ambergris Element, for episode 13, we have an aqua shuttle. We're on a water world. It seems like it's Scotty, McCoy, Kirk, and Spock are on the aqua shuttle, and Scotty's piloting it. But it's actually Lieutenant Clayton. Were you confused like me, Matt?
Yeah, anybody in a red shirt with black hair looks like Scotty on the show, so it was confusing, yes. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed. And I did want to ask, so we have the design of the Aqua Shuttle, which is a submarine shuttle. And then we apparently the Enterprise only has one Aqua Shuttle, but they also have a boat shuttle, which is to say a shuttle that just functions like an open top boat that goes around the top of the ocean world. Did you prefer the Aqua Shuttle sub shuttle design, or did you prefer the boat shuttle design?
I like the Aqua Shuttle, but I wonder why the regular shuttle just doesn't have some like conversion mechanism for underwater travel, since it's already has all the stuff you would need to travel the depths of space underwater is similar with the pressure and everything.
That's an interesting point about conversion. I guess my counterpoint might be, okay, you're not going underwater very often.
Yeah.
And maybe having the underwater conversion mechanism compromises the regular space shuttle rather than convert it over to something that you're almost never going to do. Maybe just have a spare that can go underwater.
I'm just stuck with Batman and how his vehicles turn into different things all the time. And I'm just thinking that all things should do that. But
that's a big believer in modularity.
But I do have a question about how do they really get this thing out? I mean, when do they need the underwater, the aqua shuttle? It's like a very specific shuttle.
I agree with you. Probably not often. Yeah. Probably not often. That is one of the things that I think the animated series and Lower Deck can do, but maybe don't do as much as they could is that you should have more Waterworld episodes of Star Trek when you're animated because the budget's there.
Chris, Bob, Kirk and Spock are turned into, like, you know, fish people or something.
They are. You know? As opposed to everybody else in the crew who just goes underwater by putting on their same force field that he has to go out into space.
That's all you need, Bob.
Was this the first time that Kirk's Enterprise crew has been attacked by a tentacle monster? It's the first time I can think of.
At least in my experience, yes, Bob. The episodes I've seen of TOS, yes.
Yeah. And then I did want to ask, too, the fact that this episode takes place over at least 5 days, Kirk and Spock are missing for, pointedly, they say, for 5 days. Does that make it the longest time span of a single Star Trek episode?
That's a difficult question to answer, Bob, because do we count the inner light as like a lifetime in an episode?
I would tend to say no, but that should argue. You could argue.
Yeah,
there actually are a couple DS9 episodes that mention 2 weeks passing or something like that.
I was going to be like, you're hell, but I was like, no, that's a two-parter.
It is a two-parter. Yeah. But yeah, it is an interesting idea because usually most TV episodes are relatively compressed time frames. So it's interesting to have that not be the case.
Right.
Matt, you mentioned Kirk and Spock's transformation. Were you horrified by Kirk's webbed hand?
Yeah, because at first I didn't know they had physical mutations. I just thought they were able to breathe underwater. And they show that for a while. And then eventually you do see the webbed fingers. He's turned into a merman.
Inspired by this episode, are you going to start derisively referring to older people as air breathers?
Yeah, I guess I could, Bob, but this episode made it seem like you could live outside of the water without being able to breathe for a very long time. And I think in the case of Spock and Kirk, if they really didn't have the lungs like they were describing it, they would be so dead pretty quick. When you take a fish out of water, it'll flop around for a little while, but man, they let them stay out. That was how they were going to kill them. They were going to put them out there and let them die that way.
With this water world, Kirk and Spock, Gil having mutants, I really did not expect it to also be an allegory about like 60s generational conflict where you have the old establishment underwater people versus the young hippie water people.
Yeah. This story is one of those things where they're able to show you so much more with the animation, but the story itself to me is just dumb. I just didn't really like it. I see what they were trying to do with it, but it was not a great story. Out of the episodes we watched this week.
Fun of the week, right? For sure. Who was your character of the episode for the ambergris element, Matt?
I'll just give it to Kirk for his webbed fingers.
I feel like that's worth noting. I'm going to put in that you're saying it's his
webbed hands.
Specifically.
Yeah.
I think that's a good note. I'm going to give it to McCoy specifically for the image of him reading scrolls in sickbay. I thought that was really funny. All right, Matt. So episode 14, The Slaver Weapon. It's written by Larry Niven. Have you ever read anything by Larry Niven or heard of Larry Niven?
I feel like I know the name, Bob. Give me something he's written before.
Ringworld is probably the most famous novel.
I think I've picked that up before. I don't know if I actually read it.
It's worth reading. It's not but amazing, but it's pretty solid, pretty good. It has a Kaczynski character in it. Niven.
Oh, you've talked about him before on this podcast, Bob. He's the one that... came up with the Kaczynski.
The Kaczynski, the evil cats, the big cats, the ones we've seen here and there on Lower Decks. They're created by Larry Niven in his Known Space series of science fiction novels and stories. And then there's a whole series of anthologies you might have seen called Man-Kizen Wars. And it's Larry Niven and his friends just writing short stories about the wars. There's something like 20 volumes of short stories about it. The Kaczynski pre-exist this episode, and this is Larry Niven bringing not only his species, but also things about the backstory. There being four wars between the humans and the Kaczynski losing them all, and the Kaczynski having basically non-sentient females and these weird patriarchy and this weird naming conventions. All that's brought in from his shared universe, if that makes sense.
Yeah, every time you tell me the story, I think that Larry Niven was just trying to write himself into Star Trek so that he could make money.
I think it was more the people who wrote Star Trek were Larry Niven fans.
Oh, they wanted him in there and wanted his stuff. Wow, that's pretty amazing. That's actually pretty cool.
I think they recently got it figured out, but I think for a while the rights were such that you couldn't really refer to the Kaczynski in Star Trek. And I don't know if you remember the Zenkethi from Star Trek DS9, but we don't see them in DS9, and eventually the novel come up with another way to represent them. But the original idea of bringing in the Zenkethi was those would be a legally distinct version of the Kaczynski.
Okay. Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, the cat aliens have a very storied past.
Matt, unlike me, you're not interested in the cat aliens.
Yeah,
you're interested in the slaver weapon itself.
Yeah, this slaver weapon, Bob, this thing's got some settings on it. It's got 7 different settings, and they go through every single setting on the...
You're proposing a toy or something.
Yeah. It's a sonic stunner, a telescope, a laser, a personal rocket motor, an energy absorber, a matter-energy conversion beam, a computer, and it has a built-in self-destruct, Bob.
everything a growing boy needs, man.
And it comes inside a box, Bob, that
where time doesn't move.
Time does not, so it will never age. It will never fall apart. It will never decompose.
And there's a nice piece of meat in there with it. It hasn't rotted at all, although it is poisoned, apparently.
In case you're hungry, we'll eat, shoot with your laser, you're good.
I did want to ask, Matt, or did want to just point out, I believe this is the first Star Trek episode that Jim Kirk does not appear in. And I believe it's the first Star Trek episode where there's not a starship.
I think that's correct, yes. I would not doubt it.
Somebody might say The Cage. Well, The Cage didn't air until the 80s. I live in fear of the pedants out there who are trying to correct me, man.
Yeah, you pedants. We know, you know what we mean. So keep communicating with us, though, because we like to talk to you.
Did you like the design of the shuttle Copernicus Men?
It reminds me of the captain's yacht design.
I didn't think of that, but I could definitely see that. And do you think the Kzinti look cute with their like kind of toothy grins and their pink and purple spacesuits? I think they look cute.
Yeah, they're not really fear. The whole thing is they're trying to paint them as these predator fierce creatures that eat meat, but they're not scary. They're not Klingons. They're cute.
Right. If you have like a jaguar with intelligence that was coming after you.
If I saw one of them eating somebody, just gnawing on a leg, maybe then I'd be like, oh, they got pink spacesuits, but they're eating someone's leg. That's wrong.
I do like that they bring up eating humans, right? Like Chuffed Captain literally says later in the episode, none of my crew has yet tasted human meat as my ancestors did. Which, if they'd actually gone and had a red shirt on this mission, then the Kzinti had chowed down on the red shirt. That could have been pretty cool. I did want to point out that the Kzinti ship Trader's Claw, which I guess is maybe not a Kzinti ship since they stole it from somebody else, but to me, it looks like a Romulan bird of prey crossed with a stereotypical UFO. It's a very interesting design.
Probably exactly what they did when they were putting it together. They just took those two designs and made one.
And I did think it was really amusing that the episode makes a lot of the Kzinti both being anti-vegetarian and misogynist. So they underestimate Uhura because she's a woman. They underestimate Spock because he's a vegetarian. Yes. Sulu's the only one they take seriously.
Yeah, the whole misogynist thing, that wasn't cool.
Did you like the picture of the slaver, or at least the possible picture of the slaver we found in the slaver box? A green creature.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think much of it. Part of this episode goes into detail that this box that the weapon was in, it belonged to whoever ruled the universe billions of years ago, and they have randomly been finding these containers or whatever, and one of them they found had a flight belt in it, and the flight belt was used later on to research artificial gravity for spaceship travel, so whoever had created these boxes and left them lying around is important to some aspect of Star Trek continuity, but I don't think it's ever brought up again, is it?
No, yeah. No. It's also wild that they're a billion years old, so they're like long, long gone.
Right, so you're talking about somebody that dropped these boxes with this advanced technology billions of years ago. Could it have been a time traveler? Possibly. Just throwing that out there.
No, not a time traveler.
No, not in Star Trek, Bob. We don't have that in Star Trek.
No, there's no need to complicate it. It's that they're time travelers.
Well, billions of years if they went back in time and dropped the box.
I refuse to acknowledge that.
All right, Bob. Bob can't stand this time travel.
Not when it's not necessary and doesn't add.
Well, Bob, my character of the week goes to Uhura for putting up with Spock of wanting her to act like she didn't know anything.
I do think the writer, Larry Niven, is probably a misogynist based on some of the other stuff I've read by him. And I do think it's the Kzinti being misogynist is a little weird. But, I mean, in context, Spock's plans make sense. Of course, Spock respects Uhura. And he just wants to use the edge that they're going to underestimate her.
Who is your character, Bob?
They describe him as lean, bedraggled, unhappy, and neurotic. That's the Kzinti telepath. I really liked him. He was very cute. He's a very run-down cat. And I really liked his line as he complains to Chuff Captain that reading Spock's mind is making me taste yellow root between flat teeth.
Well, Bob, episode 15, Eye of the Beholder. Yes, Eye of the Beholder shares its name with a Next Generation episode 2, I believe.
It does. Makes it hard to find it on Memory Alpha.
Yes, it does sometimes. It aired January 5th, 1974. It's basically Star Trek people get trapped in a zoo, an interplanetary zoo.
Is the best we can hope for, Matt, being in a zoo that's run by giant telepathic slugs?
I think so, Bob. I would be happy with that, honestly. I think I'd be good with it.
I could deal with that, too. I could deal with that, too.
All you got to do is tell them what you want telepathically, and they bring it to you. Like, what's the problem?
Apparently, in an early draft of this episode, the biologist, Randy Bryce, from the ship they're rescuing, she was McCoy's daughter.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I wondered why she had more speaking parts than what I'm used to seeing in these support characters.
Yeah, and she was introduced like she was someone important.
Right.
It didn't matter at all. Honestly, I think there's the least to say about this one, so
yeah.
We can just go to character of the episode. Who was yours, Matt?
Mine was Scotty Bob, because he took over the bridge and tried to deal with the slug creature on the bridge. It's funny to watch.
That is funny. I was, one thing to go back to our first episode for a minute, to Ambergris element. I was a little sad, even though I like Scotty in command. I was hoping we'd get to see McCoy in command. That could have been funny. And speaking of, my character was McCoy for getting stuck under a dinosaur, getting stuck under a kaiju. You just see his legs flailing. That was pretty funny.
But Bob, instead of actually moving the tail, let's just dig under it, get him out that way.
Brilliant, Matt. That's the only way to get to him.
Yeah, the only way.
All right. Speaking of the only way, Matt, episode 16, Jihad. We begin by we get a reuse of the ship graveyard. Do you remember the ship graveyard and Time Trap?
Yes, Bob. And this is where I'm going to give you, I'm going to take a little bit of a tangent here. There was an issue of Lower Decks that dropped yesterday. It was Lower Decks number 1 through IDW. And they go back. They go back to the Time Trap. And they go to the ship, the USS Bonaventure. And that's part of the squat line.
Wow.
So I'm saying it may be something you want to look at, because they do actually show footage from that graveyard in the comic. And they also show images of Kirk from the animated series.
Maybe I do have to look at that. I really don't like the writer, though.
Just take a look at it and see if you like it. I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
We get Kirk and Spock called to this, what's actually just ships orbiting a planet in this episode.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be a ship graveyard. Yep. But they get called to a meeting. Do you want to run down who the people are at the meeting, Matt?
Yeah, and their purpose here is they're trying to retrieve some sort of soul stone or some weird MacGuffin.
It's a religious artifact of the Score people, and if the Score people do not get it back, they will launch the Jihad of the episode's title.
So all these characters are brought because they all have certain skills that they think will help them retrieve this thing.
Or at least some of them do. The skill set of one of them is kind of ambiguous.
So we'll start with the bird character. His name is T'Char, and he flies. I mean, that's his thing. He's the Prince of Score. Then you have a lizard and the Nalish named Scored.
And Nalish is not from the episode. That's from the Paracanon.
Gotcha. The caterpillar is the Nasat named M3 Green.
Yep. And Nasat is also not mentioned in the episode. That's from the Paracanon.
Oh, gotcha. Laura is the southern female Kraven the Hunter, who hits on Kirk the whole time. And then you have the teleporting badgers or the Vidala.
Yeah, who are the kind of the Q figures, and it's just very cute that they're badgers who teleport.
Yeah, there's a bunch of weird characters that are brought into this episode. I liked it because it was a hodgepodge group of people.
It's a little bit of a heist episode.
But choosing Kirk for leadership was kind of funny, like he's your best theory.
And I understand Spock. I believe Spock is that good. I don't know if I believe Kirk is that good. So T'Char is the scout. And then M3 Green is the thief. Laura is the hunter. And then the teleporting badger doesn't actually go on the mission with them.
Yeah.
But it was unclear what sword, the reptile, the lizard, the Nalish, his point was. I guess he was supposed to be the strong man based on a couple things he does, but it was never really made clear.
Yeah, he's just a reptile man that's easy to draw.
Did you like in this episode that we would have the random commercial break cuts? And we would just show the Enterprise orbiting, or we would show the Enterprise in the ship graveyard, but that would have nothing to do with the presumably fairly distant world that Spock and the crew were transported to.
We have to have these very simple places to put the commercial in for the people that do that. And that's why they said, when you see the Enterprise, stick the commercial in.
I also wanted to comment that Spock is rather like me when I'm drunk. He's always telling people to leave him behind, go on without him.
Go on, I'll be okay. Why you want to be by yourself, Bob, when you're drunk? Come on now.
I don't want to bring the crew down. I want to die in the alley on my own. Matt, did you call that T'Char would be the traitor?
He was scary looking.
He kept flying. He kept flying away. You know.
Yeah.
He was not with the group for long periods. It's a little suspicious. It's a little suspicious.
If I wasn't going to give it to him, I probably would have given it to a lizard sword. Just because we didn't know as much about him.
Laura's so blinded by Kirk's attractiveness, she's not going to betray him. And M3 Green, you want him to be the lovable, cowardly thief. Matt, we have two warrior races in our array of episodes here. We have the bird people, the Score, and then we have the cat people, the Kzinti. Who did you find more intimidating?
Probably the Kzinti, but not necessarily from this animated series. If I met a real Kzinti, I'd probably be more scared of them. Seemed more like an animal.
Certainly the social dynamics of the Kzinti are really frightening with how they treat their women.
They're pretty messed up.
All right, Matt, who is the character of the episode, the Jihad episode?
Probably Laura for just wanting to get laid. I mean, that's her whole point in being there.
Very relatable. Very relatable. Speaking of relatability, I went with M3 Green, especially for his line. I'm not even afraid anymore. I'm just very tired.
Neth. All right, Bob, when it comes to favorite episode of these four that we watched for this particular episode, I'm going to say Eye of the Beholder was my favorite just because I like the whole setup. Just the premise itself. It's the one that we didn't talk much about, but to me, it kept my attention the most, which is why I liked it.
That's really surprising you went with that one. I would have put that one number three for me, but I get it. You want to be kept by a giant telepathic slug in a zoo. I understand how you relate to it.
Well, and it was just interesting what they did in the episode as far as how they handled all the telepathic pieces and how they handled getting their gear back and how they handled getting away from them and then the child missing. All that, it was interesting to me. The other plots, sometimes they just got convoluted and it was hard for me to follow. Yeah.
I really liked the slaver weapon myself, partially out of nostalgia and partially out of just the interesting collision of Larry Niven and Star Trek.
You're right.
But I agree with you that the parts in the slaver weapon where they're tediously working through the settings but kind of pretty boring. Matt, overall, out of all of season one, what's your favorite episode?
I'm going to go with the Lorelei signal.
Man, Matt, that's a very feminist choice.
I like the episode. I thought it was pretty badass, honestly.
Well, Laura takes command in the Enterprise, which is the first time a woman ever takes command of a ship in Star Trek.
Right. And it's just the whole story behind it's pretty cool. I just like the whole idea.
Yeah, Odyssey inspired. Yeah, it's fun. I would probably say Survivor or Time Trap. Survivor for childhood nostalgia. Time Trap for actual quality, which I know is why Matt is saying I need to read Star Trek Lower Decks Volume 2, Number 1.
Yes, exactly. You need to read it.
Maybe we'll check in on the next episode about that. So this has been our coverage of Star Trek The Animated Series Season 1, the last four episodes. Expect an episode pretty soon where we do the six episodes of Season 2. And then we will obviously finish up our coverage of Lower Decks, and we will have covered all of Star Trek Animation, all of Star Trek Animation.
Damn.
This has been Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everyone.
Thanks for listening.